Welcome back to the Drew Marshall Show. Glad to have you. And I know you've been looking forward to this hour for a long time. On the phone with us live, Mrs. Kathy Lee Gifford. And we're going to chat with Kathy Lee a little bit about her life, especially as a mom in an industry that, well, it would seem to be tough to be a mom in, that's for sure. Hello, Kathy Lee Gifford.
Hey, Drew. Happy Mother's Day to you.
Well, thank you.
I know you're not one, but I bet you have one.
I do. I've actually got two mothers. I was adopted.
Oh, God. So you're doubly blessed.
I am doubly blessed. My mom, my adopted mom died about 15 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
On the same night my son was born.
Oh, my goodness.
It was just an amazing night, let me tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
And then a couple of years later, on Mother's Day, I first met up with my birth mother, yeah.
And has that been great since?
It's been really, really neat. She is, she's a very, wait, hold on a second. Why are we talking
Who's
about
interviewing
me?
Interviewing whom? I know.
Wait a second here.
I always think everybody's more interesting. I really do than I am.
That's kind of why I do what I do. I think that people's lives and stories are the greatest things in the world.
And everybody's got one.
Oh, yeah.
I've always said, you live to a certain point, if anybody's life story was made into a motion picture, it would be compelling and moving and thrilling and, frightening and all those things.
The whole deal.
The whole deal.
Yeah. Well, again, on the phone with us is Kathy Lee Gifford, and I just really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us here in Southern Ontario. Do you have a Canadian connection of some sort?
I'm sitting here with my mom, actually, who came in for Grandparents' Day yesterday at our kids' church, and she is originally from the Toronto area. Her father was from that area, and he died many, many years ago, but she's definitely Canadian-born. Actually, her father was. She was born in New York City.
Right.
But because her mother was from there. But her father and grandfather and everyone on her father's side of the family were from Brookline.
Okay.
Outside of Toronto or part of Toronto. I'm not sure of all the history, but... And then my brother was a pastor there in Cambridge.
Well, that's the rumor I was getting to.
Right.
Now, he's down in New York, is that right?
He's now pastor of the Calvary Baptist Church in New York City. That's directly across the street from Carnegie Hall.
Right.
In fact, I'm going to a service there at his church tonight where they're having a wonderful, I hear it's wonderful, little rock musical called The Rock and the Rabbi that's supposed to be very cool about Peter and Paul.
Right.
So that's where I'm off to tonight, Don't miss the old Hollywood premieres. I'd rather go see Rockin' the Rabbi with my mother at my brother's church. Isn't that pathetic?
No, it's good. It's good. It's quite good. All right, listen, I want to dive right into the CD and book stuff that's going on here.
Okay.
Gentle Grace.
Yes.
I read somewhere that you really weren't kind of looking to make the inspirational, album kind of thing.
No.
You were kind of involved with developing some Broadway stuff. And so what happened? You got God just kind of bamboozled you here, or what?
He has a way of doing that, doesn't he? I've noticed that the one thing the Lord never really lets you get is too comfortable for too long a period.
Yeah.
And I was a pig in mud writing these musicals for the last 4 years. And about a year and a half ago, lovely gentleman from Maranatha Records named Randy Allward called me, and he said, Kathy, I know this isn't what you do anymore, but God keeps talking to my spirit, talking to my heart, that I'm just supposed to call you and see if you would be open to doing a contemporary Christian album. I know you haven't done one in 25 years. I know you don't feel like that's what God's called you to do on a permanent
regular basis.
Regular
basis, yeah.
But would you pray about it? And I spent about an hour on the phone with him, and he so understood my heart. And he was such a loving, kind, generous, sweet person. Of course, I promised him I'd pray about it. And I happened to look over at this pile. Oh, that's Regis, my dog, barking in the background.
Yes, we've heard about him, yes.
Oh, actually, that's Chevley. Anyway, this little herd of things just went by.
Yes.
Live radio.
Yeah.
I looked at this pile of lyrics, probably about, 50 songs sitting there that I had written over the last 7 or 8 years that have been very, very painful, very tumultuous, very dark, and yet triumphant years.
Yeah.
And it was like the Lord was speaking to my heart, and he was saying, do you want those to collect dust, or do you want it to collect hearts for the kingdom? And, you know, once he sort of talks to you that way, it's like, no, I really would prefer it, just collect a lot of dust. What am I supposed to do at this point? He doesn't give you much choice. When the Holy Spirit convicts your heart, you just know what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, this wonderful man that goes to my church here in Connecticut is a name some people may know. He's a brilliant, brilliant producer named Rob Mathis.
Yeah. Now, he's done work with Sting, right?
Sting, Pavarotti, Elton John, Rod Stewart. In fact, I thank him on the record for saying, thank you so much for taking time, sandwiching me between Pavarotti and Rod Stewart.
And he goes to your church?
He goes to our church.
Now, which church do you, what's your home church?
We go to a congregational church in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Okay.
It's just that we're, you know, it's from the 1600s, and it's just a precious little group of believers and nothing fancy. The choir's, forgive me if they hear this, but they're terrible, and they know it. But the Spirit of the Lord is so present. And we have two female pastors who are so, never wanted to be pastors, same thing. God called them, and they couldn't ignore it. And so anyway.
Okay, so you hooked up with Rob.
Hooked up with Rob. But he only limited time. He could only do two of the songs. And then there was this gentleman that I met from Maranatha that named Phil Cius, who I fell in love with his spirit. And he was just here this week for the launch of the record. We did the Today Show and all these different things. I look forward. I just hear his name and I smile. That's how much this man just exudes the love of the Lord.
Well, apparently you and Phil kind of sat down and wrote, like, most of the stuff in one weekend.
We did. We did. You did your homework, Drew. You are a trained professional.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. He is amazing, and he came to my house, and we did write over the weekend. Originally, this album was supposed to come out last fall, so we were kind of under the gun. And we wrote them, and we felt that we prayed, more importantly than writing them, we prayed ahead of time. I said, Lord, you know what? We just pray you'll get our egos out of the way. Ego, somebody once told me ego stands for edging God out.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that cool?
Wait, let me get that down. I'm writing that down.
Yeah, E-G-O, edging God out. And we said, Lord, we don't want to do that with this. Neither of us needed one more project. Neither of us needed another record for our wall. I certainly didn't need anything else to make me busier. I'm busier than I've ever been in my life doing what I've never enjoyed doing more. So we said, Lord, if this isn't of you, if this isn't going to be used of you to touch hearts and build your kingdom, then tell us now, you know, and it was so obvious from the moment we sat down together that it was anointed of the Lord. Just, first of all, because the lyrics were already there, that had been born in authenticity, you know, Drew? We didn't sit down and decide, let's write some songs.
No way, no. I can imagine the last 7 years would be the prime writing period of your life.
I mean, I've written about 250 songs in the last 7 years. Yep. Well, that doesn't mean they're all good, but let me tell you, they're all honest.
Oh, yeah. And with weight and merit.
Well, thank you. What I'm hoping is that people who think that they've experienced what I went through with me all those years, whether they just saw a headline on a stupid rag and the tabloids in the grocery store, or whether they knew anything else. People think they know what I went through all that time. And I got thousands of emails when I was still on the show with Regis, many times from non-believers, basically saying, I can't get out of bed because my husband just left me. And yet, here, I see you on television. I'm watching you right now.
Yeah, how do you do it?
You've got your smile on. You got your makeup done. You haven't gained 200 pounds.
Yeah.
You've kept your family together. You're smiling. What is your secret? And I've been able to share very privately with those people through emails and notes and back and forth, and in many cases phone calls, that it's simply the grace of God that got me through, and that grace is available for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need a talk show to be able to get God's grace. It's a free gift available for everybody. So that's why I knew that God would use this record, because the songs were so... A Gentle Grace was probably written at my darkest, darkest time.
Oh, yeah, and let me just, I'm dying to say these things to you. You have to understand something about me here, first of all. I was at home for 4 years raising the kids while my wife worked. While I was at home, that's when I first fell in love with you, okay?
Is that okay with your wife?
Yeah, that's fine with
really
her.
Really fine with me.
Not a problem at all. But I mean, you know, there's only so much house stuff that I really wanted to do, so I procrastinated a lot and turned on the tube, and of course, there you were, and Regis.
Hard to get away from
you. Oh, it was just right. Like a recurring nightmare. It's just,
exactly. Yep. Oh, you're so right.
So, but I need to say this to you, okay?
Okay.
Three things. Number one,
I'm really sorry for trying to figure out if you were really a genuine follower of Christ simply by judging you and watching your actions and reactions on TV. That was unfair of me to do that. I call it the Bob Dylan theory. Bob comes out and says he's a Christian. All the Christians cross their arms and say, okay, we'll see.
Oh, yeah, we're the only ones that that kill our wounded.
Yeah, we get a firing squad and line up in a circle.
Right.
Yeah. Secondly, I want to thank you for caring enough about your children, about children, period, to build Cody's house. And most importantly, for not letting that whole stupid slave labor issue just go away and for getting stuck in it yourself instead of hiding behind your publicist.
Well, you know what, Drew? I thank you so much. Dad, and my son, of course, walks in on a live radio interview. Hello, Coach. Daddy's at that tournament right now. Okay, sweetheart. You know what? How many people are listening right now to us, Drew, do you think?
250,000.
Can they relate to a son that walks in while Mommy's doing a... Codes? Not now, baby.
Yeah, not now. I'm on the phone.
I love you dearly.
Does he want to say anything? Can we put him on.
Come here. All right, now you've done it. You're on the radio, buddy. All right, that good. He went running.
You see, great. I knew it would solve it
he's
right
got
there.
He's in cleats. He's got a cowboy. He's got a baseball bat, and he went running out the back door. Thank you, Drew. That was very good.
Now,
put them on the air, they go running.
Yeah, that's the tactic. Now,
first of all, I want to thank
you
for the three things you said.
Well, hold on, but I haven't said the third thing.
I thought you...
This is it. Ready?
Okay.
I've been practicing this for 5 days.
Okay.
Thank you for modeling forgiveness with Frank.
Wow.
That gave so much stinking hope in a world where one in two marriages, whether they're Christian or not, are in the toilet on the way to a lawyer. And that especially meant a lot to my wife and I, who have gone through very similar struggles.
It's hard, isn't it, Drew?
Yeah.
It's painful. It's painful on a level that I've never dreamed I'd experience.
And all of this is really, that's what you wrote from.
Yeah, I did.
That's how you
broken place.
Yeah, that's how you put gentle grace together.
Yep. It's especially the line it says, look beyond my broken heart. Father, look at the offering I raise. Because at that point I was realizing his faith is not something I just have, but faith without works is dead. I knew that. But faith is something we do. And it talks about how this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Look what comes first. Rejoice. It's almost like this is what you do. I command you to rejoice in the midst of your circumstances, whatever they may be. Happiness, joy, sorrow, devastation, rejoice, for I am the Lord thy God. And what happens when we do is, let us rejoice, we do that, and be glad in it. And it's when we do the first, it releases the second. It's almost like when I pray for my enemies, because God tells me to, it's a commandment. It's like, this is what I demand of you. This is, if you're going to be my follower, these are the rules.
Yeah, do it.
And I don't like a lot of the rules, Drew. But I do it because, if I say I'm a Christian, I'm going to do it. So I did that. Every time I do that, this love for them invades my heart. I can't do anything but love them or feel pain for them or feel sorrow for them. It's impossible to hate. Once you pray for your enemy, you can't hate them.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing to me how God's wisdom about things is for a reason. It's not to make little robots out of us. It's to give us that abundant life where he wants us to be and live in and to abide in. So was forgiveness easy? No. Was it necessary for Frank? Absolutely. Was it necessary for me? Absolutely. Will I ever forget? Absolutely not. No. I just won't. I'm not God. Only God forgets those kinds of things. I try to, And I pray to, but I'm human. And every year when the date comes around, I'm aware of it.
Sure.
I'm totally aware of it. But then I look at this man that I love, that is so dear and is so precious, not just to me, but to God, and the best mother I've ever met in my life. You talk about how you stayed home for your wife's sake. I feel that way about Frank. He's at a point in his life where he's in every Hall of Fame you can ever be in. And all of that is settled in him. And now all he wants to do is be a mother and a father and a best friend and all those things to these children. And I'm so grateful for that.
Now, you are, well, I just forgot. What's the guy's name with the suspenders, the talk show host?
Larry King.
Well, thank you. I just, you know, suspenders. That's all you got to say.
Yeah, suspenders.
Here's a quote from you on that show. I think you're only able to forgive if you know that you yourself have been forgiven. And my personal faith teaches me that I've been forgiven of everything that I'm possibly capable of doing. And if I in return cannot have that same mercy and compassion for other human beings, then my forgiveness is almost a moot point. How can I receive forgiveness and yet not offer to others? And it's not just a husband or a friend. I have to forgive every day in my life. Don't you?
Mm. Yeah, that was in February, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's true. I mean, it's
Well, we all have to live with the consequences of someone else's sin every day, whether it be Adam and Eve, simply. Or just somebody else. I mean, you just have to deal with it.
The measure of our pain is always the measure of the love. And nobody could really hurt me as deeply as my husband could.
Hmm.
Or my children can.
Yeah.
Or my best friend can. People that I don't know can write hideous and horrible things about me, and I sort of put that right where it belongs, right
in the garbage can. Yeah, well, hold on. What? Why? Are you just a magnet for that stuff?
I think so, yeah.
Why? Is it in Australia, I was living in Australia for 5 years. We just moved back. I was pastoring in a church down there, and they have the tall poppy syndrome thing there. It's leftover British stuff, where if anybody kind of rises up above the crowd and is especially a good person, they like to pull them down.
Right.
Is that what it is with you?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the people that do it. I try not to even fill my life with even negativity like that. People always say, why do people hate you? And I just got to go, gee, why don't you ask the people that hate me? Because isn't the person with hate the one that has the problem?
Yeah.
I don't hate anybody. The people who've done the most evil to me imaginable, I do not harbor 1 ounce of hate in my heart for them. So you really should go to the person that does the hating and ask them why.
So I should phone Howard Stern and do an interview with Howie?
If you want to, then, you know, God bless you. Yeah, I've prayed for Howard. I have sent him a note when he was getting a divorce, and he made fun of it on the air, apparently. I don't know.
You're kidding. Seriously?
That's fine. He can do with it what he wants. I am responsible for listening to God for what he wants me to do. And I'm not. I don't care what Howard Stern thinks of me. I do care what God thinks.
Folks, we're on the phone with Kathy Lee Gifford, and for those of you who don't know that name, what, have you been living in a cave for 20 years?
she's not famous, but she's infamous.
Yeah, that's right. The Regis and Kathy Lee, okay? Who's now the Drew and Kathy Lee?
Hey, I finally made it to the big time.
Oh, yeah, swinging big right now, let me tell you.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, yeah. And Kathy has just released a beautiful inspirational CD called Gentle Grace, and along with it, a devotional book, which I think is excellent. I can just imagine somebody sitting down with that CD, just wanting to unwind in front of a fire, whatever the deal is, and cracking that devotional book. And I just think brilliant combination, especially if it's coming from the 7 years you've had.
Drew, thank you so much for sort of getting that. You know, the Zondervan people came to me after the Maranatha people did, and I was already committed to the record, and they heard the record, and they said, you know, you write from such a place of hurt and depth, and yet the whole triumphant aspect of what you've come through is so obvious. Would you mind expanding on the themes you cover in the songs with your lyrics and writing devotionals to go along with it, maybe 24 of them? They didn't come to me until November. And you know in the publishing business what that's like to get those.
Yeah.
I had to write them so quickly.
Yeah.
And I just prayed over every one of them. And at the end of each one of them, my brother, Dave, those little prayers were written by my brother, Dave. And I was so happy to be able to sort of minister with him. He's just one of the most extraordinary men of God and just one of the most extraordinary people I've ever known. And I just like him so much. And he's one of those people that should be in the pulpit, you know?
Yeah. As opposed to many others who we want.
Well, we just say, Lord, could you maybe just like put them into rehab for a while, you know, and then you know, I mean, so much of what the world knows of Christianity, sadly, is from those of us who have let the Lord down, and I include myself in that. I know I'm embarrassed. I've been often embarrassed. We, as evangelicals, for years have been embarrassed by what certain people have done. The abuse of the pulpit by them, and as a result, the damage to the kingdom. Because if this is all the world sees of Christianity, then it's almost like what the Arab world sees now with what's happening in these horrible abuses by these prisoners. That's not what most of our people are like. No. Certainly not most Americans. We don't condone it. It's hideous. And most Christians are not right-wing, Bible-toting, scripture-spewing, hate-filled, abortion clinic blowing up fanatics.
Yeah.
We're just not.
No.
We just love Jesus, and we're trying every day to serve him and follow him. And we fail. And we let him down, and we let each other down. But our heart so longs to hear his voice and answer it.
You know, I think that in this postmodern New Age society that we're living in, that people actually, they want to sort of test drive Christianity before they buy.
Yeah, I don't blame them, do you?
No, not at all, especially with the 80s television stuff that we went through. And I mean, moving back from Australia, I flicked on the TV and I did the channel thing and I went, did we not learn anything from the
80s? Oh, I know. It's unbelievable.
So I think they want to test drive Christianity, and I think really what the world wants to see is not so much moral purity from the Christians as much as moral reality.
And this is what I've seen changing in the last 25 years since I did my last Christian record. Now, when I say that, none of my albums since have been non-Christian. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
Even though I left the Christian music industry, I never stopped being a Christian.
Right.
I just felt that God was really moving me into a ministry within the secular world. And I still believe that that's where he has me. And I've been grateful to be there. People say to me, how can you be a Christian in show business? All along they've said that. And I always answer the same way. I go, how could I be in show business without being a Christian?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, we instead of condemning those of us who God has led here, you know, pray for us.
Yeah.
We it's a lonely place. I can't tell you how many times I was doing interviews over the last 20 years, and somebody would, during a commercial break or something, would lean over to me very conspiratorially almost and go, I'm praying for you. I'm a brother in the Lord. Or, gosh, I'm just, please know I'm with you. I'm a sister. And I'd never heard it, never read it. These are all people, if I name their names, you go, you're kidding, they're
right.
Christian?
Yeah.
But they're in the closet because they're terrified of the price it's going to cost.
Oh, definitely. I remember interviewing again, I can't say his name because he doesn't want me to.
Right.
But a famous musician down in Sydney, Australia, and the basic point was he didn't want the evangelical community to know that he was a Christian because they would sink their hooks into him and then want to put him into a sort of a box
and label him
and label him. And if he ever varied or wanted to bust out of that box for any reason whatsoever or didn't do God the way they wanted him to do God,
there you go.
It's bizarre.
Well, it's. I don't know if you ever knew what Gandhi once said. You know, I would have become a Christian if it hadn't have been for the Christians. we're not here today to badmouth all the Christians because I mean this is our body of Christ. These are our brothers and sisters in the Lord, and this is you and me.
Yeah, but I became a Christian because of Christ, not because of the Christians.
Hello, absolutely. And if Mel's movie did anything, it showed the magnitude of the sacrifice, the magnitude of the gift. Was equal to the love that he felt for us. And that's why I became a Christian, too. And you know what? Honestly, the reason I got out of it 25 years ago was because it was so self-righteous, so lacking in humility and lacking in mercy.
Right.
And I said, wait a minute. If I read my Bible, it talks about how wondrously I am made in my mother's womb, how perfect I am. Not that I'm perfect, but perfectly formed for God's purpose. And so now here I am, this completely unique DNA creature that God went to an awful lot of trouble to make.
A little bit more trouble in your case, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Thank goodness I'm not triplets. But anyway, but the point is, then we as a culture, and as a Christian culture, go to so much trouble to try to cookie cutter us and fit us back into somebody else's mold, an idea of what Christians are supposed to be. When in reality, God says, I got a purpose for every aspect of you. I don't make mistakes. Now, do I have rules and regulations I want to be followed?
Some boundaries?
And boundaries, absolutely. But they're loving.
Yeah.
Those are loving things made to keep us happy and blessed and joyful.
See, I'm resonating with this a little too much, so it's going to turn into a little bit of a spiel here. But
okay, spiel, baby.
Okay. I went to a thing called I can't even say the name. Okay, I went to this festival where they promote various mission organizations. Okay,
right.
And I didn't go to there because I was going to it. I meant I was meeting an editor from a paper.
Right.
I had to meet him there, and where I was walking around, I thought, and I just started getting really bugged. And I was analyzing. I said, what's going on inside of me? Why am I bugged at this? Am I bugged at the fact that we're using the same stupid flannel boards we've been using for 20 years at these things?
Maybe.
That no one's got any creativity. No one can think outside the box. What is it? And as I let that simmer down inside of me, I came up with this. I'm sick of the North American Christian tribe mentality. I'm sick of the tribe. I'm not sick of Christ.
Oh, never.
I'm not sick of genuine followers of Christ who are willing to be open and transparent and vulnerable. But I'm sick of the nuances and the aftertaste that comes along with being part of this tribe for 25 years. Does that make sense?
It completely makes sense. And you used a term that I've been using all week long in promoting this record: out of the box. My ministry has always been, and I pray to God until the day I die, it will continue to be, towards the people that will never listen to this show, Drew. They'll never hear this conversation. They will not go to church because they know too many church-going people they don't like. Mm. They will never watch a Christian program because if they do, they turn it on to make fun.
Which is easy to do.
And it's easy to do. Yeah. I don't think Jesus spent a whole lot of time in the synagogues.
No.
The scripture I read, he was out with the people who needed him, who needed love, who needed forgiveness, who needed healing, who needed value. What he did for women, to value women in a society where they were deemed less valuable than cattle or a camel.
And
in many parts of our world today, that's still the same. What Jesus did for women alone was so radical, it blows the mind.
You know, a favorite author of mine, Mike Iaconelli.
I don't know that name.
He was behind Youth Specialties and one of the guys behind The Wittenberg Door, which is the Christian world's only satirical magazine.
Oh, I have to get that.
Oh, man. It
is
makes...
it like Mad Magazine?
Oh, yeah,
13?
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
Oh, my God. Put me on the roster, baby.
It makes fun. I'll get the
I'm sure they've had me as a cover article several times.
Well, it was the fold-out in the middle, actually.
Well, so. I was young and I needed the money. Come on.
So, anyways, he said, I think what put Jesus on the cross was the crazy idea that broken, screwed up, ordinary people like you and me could be right with God. that Christ would actually cross the street to be with a skanky person as opposed to walking around with the holy people.
I know.
And that just ticked the holy people off enough that they slaughtered him.
That is so much. It's so true, because the only time he ever took up his hand against anyone was towards the religious people who were making a mockery of his father's house. He never did it with any sinner that I can remember. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I'm no biblical scholar, but the fact that the only time he got truly, truly righteously angry enough to take up a whip and drive people out
was religious.
It was the religious people. And this is what fascinated me about this whole thing with Mel Gibson this past year. And Mel, I've known for many years because he's been on our show many times. Every time he had a movie out, of course, he came through.
Sure.
And I ran into him this past summer at the CBA convention down in Orlando, which stands for the Christian Booksellers Association.
Right.
Which 25 years ago, Drew, when I was there, it was the most humorless group of people you've ever met in your life. And here I am now. I just came back from St. Petersburg, Russia, on a family vacation, and I'm in Orlando with Mel Gibson. Which ain't bad. There's a good reason to come home.
Yeah.
But I leaned over to Mel and I go, How are you navigating these
the evangelical community,
the evangelical water?
Yeah.
And he goes, he's very cute as he anyway is, and he leans into me. He goes, everybody wants to hug me and pray for me. Because it's freaking me out.
a little too kumbaya for me.
A little too kumbaya. Yeah. And I started laughing and I said, you know what? But these people, if they believe that God has raised you up for such a time as this, get out of the way, buddy. You're not going to believe how loving they will be on their knees for you.
Yeah.
They will buy tickets. They will make sure this movie is the biggest thing that ever happened. Now, I'm no prophetess. I had no idea that...
Hold on. Let's get something straight. You're not a biblical scholar, and you're not a prophetess.
No.
Okay.
I'm just a bad Christian.
Yeah.
Trying to be a good one.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well,
and 38 years later, I'm still a bad Christian trying to be a good one.
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing all right. And